T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Prashant Yadav joins us now, senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and a professor of supply chain management and an expert on medical supply chains. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate your time. I really do. I don't know if you heard what I said about things not just happening. We take a lot of things for granted, but they don't. And when we talk about a vaccine being available, well, first of all, you got to discover it. Can you walk us through just the supply chain, the logistics alone in getting a vaccine out to people?
Yeah, so we see a lot of our attention is focused on, do we have a vaccine ready? And the phrase ready means, has it been approved for use in most cases? But actually having a vaccine ready for population use also requires us to have many other logistical steps in place. So first, we need to have enough manufacturing capacity. And manufacturing capacity isn't just about having a plant which can make the vaccine, but it's a series of steps to make the product that goes into the vials, the having enough vials, having rubber stoppers and the little aluminum sealing that goes on top of it, having enough syringes, having ingredients that go into the vaccine, such as adjuvants, stabilizers. So it's a complex supply chain. Oftentimes, it's something that spans across multiple countries in the globe. And then when it's ready and manufactured, we need cold chain, we need fridges, we need cold trucks to get the vaccine out to large numbers of people, run vaccination campaigns. So lots of operational and logistical steps involved, Tom.
So, first of all, you got a couple of different companies trying to develop a vaccine, correct?
Yeah, there are hundreds of vaccine candidates under development. About 10 of them have reached the stage of early stage, human testing, and the U.S. government's Warp Speed Project has invested in, I believe, about 7 of them.
So who starts placing orders for what in terms of vials? Because they don't just send this stuff out. Well, let me take a step back even further. This is something, these vaccines that are grown, this is something that you take chemicals and mix them together. How do you make a vaccine?
So traditionally, we used to make vaccines by inoculating mammalian cells. Nowadays, we do a lot of recombinant protein-based manufacturing, so synthetically. Some of the newer vaccine candidates we have are what are called as messenger RNA vaccine or DNA vaccine. So these are, fairly advanced techniques of manufacturing using biotechnology at almost at its very frontier in terms of biomanufacturing. So very
sophisticated. I'm having a very hard time hearing you, so let me take a break here, and we'll come back and try to fix that. We're talking to Prashant Yadav about the actual steps involved to get a vaccine, because we keep hearing about it, and we want it by the end of the year. I don't see, if you look into the supply chain part of this, how that could possibly happen, but maybe I'm wrong. 9:15, yeah, coming back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. It is 9:20. We're talking to Prashant Yadav, senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and a professor of supply chain management. He's an expert on medical supply chains, who is nice enough to give us some more of his time. He's been on with us before. So we were talking about RNA, recombinant RNA, which, of course, you and I know all about. But for those that don't, can you maybe just tell us a little bit how that plays a part? Because the question is, and I guess I should recap for the audience, we all talk about a vaccine for this, but what goes behind that? What goes into making it and developing one? And I know there are different, I guess, vaccines under development. Do you grow this? Do you manufacture it? That was the question before we had a little bit of trouble there. Can you walk us through it if you can?
Yeah, so I think our technology for manufacturing today and the types of vaccine platforms that we now have don't always require us to grow them in mammalian cells as we used to in the past. Most of the steps can be carried out in bioreactors and are synthetically manufactured. And the good thing is that we are, the we here being the, both the federal government in the United States, but also a number of agencies globally, are investing in creating the manufacturing capacity for many of these steps, even before a vaccine is ready or approved and all the trials have been done. And that's, in a way, going to speed up when we know which of the vaccines is proven to be efficacious. All of these sophisticated steps have already been invested in, and there's enough manufacturing capacity. Same thing being done about the supplies that are needed, such as, you know, glass vials, rubber stoppers, other ingredients that go into a vaccine. So I think many different efforts coming together in a way that is helping compress the timelines for when we can have a vaccine available in sufficient quantity. What is important to keep in mind is that the timelines for developing a vaccine, assessing its safety, efficacy, are things which still need to run its due course. But when that time arrives that we have established safety and efficacy, then we shouldn't have any more delays. So that's what I think the manufacturing and supply chain pieces are working on to get us ready when we do have a vaccine.
And Dr. Fauci yesterday saying that even though it's called Operation Warp Speed, whatever they come up with is going to be rigorously tested as any vaccine has ever been. And adding, and I guess this goes to what you were just saying, that the ones that don't work, well, they're just going to throw them away, I guess, is what happens there. And you pay for the research, but that's the cost of trying to come up with it quickly. Does that make sense?
So I think that the nature of clinical trials for vaccines and other medical products, you know, do have an intrinsic uncertainty about which ones will succeed, and we have to bear the risk of some of them failing. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because that way at least we make sure we are investing in enough ways of trying, and, you know, one or a few of them will succeed. The other important thing, similar to what you described, Dr. Fauci saying, is that we have a strong Centers for Disease Control. We have a strong Food and Drug Administration. We have the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. So very strong institutions in the country who guarantee that the safety, efficacy, development processes are all monitored and scrutinized. And we have Operation Warp Speed, which is investing in manufacturing capacity and getting the supplies right. What we need, though, is that the scientists and the manufacturing scientists who are in charge of these efforts, they should be allowed to have their say and their operating room to decide how to carry out the next steps in an appropriate and well-thought-out manner. And we shouldn't put them under any additional pressure for speeding up things because of political realities or things like that.
And look, I'm a capitalist. I got no problem with companies making money. This would be a big money maker for the company that develops it. Yes.
It's hard to say whether it'll be a big money developer, a big money maker. I think, as compared to other things such as, you know, oncology products or many other kinds of treatments, I think just the scrutiny on this is so high that I doubt if any of the developing companies can charge a very high price and make a lot of money in it.
But clearly, yes, there should be enough profit margin, and we'll see how they price it.
So who is overseeing this? Is the FDA overseeing this? Because I think you were just talking about latitude or giving them some room to test it, because you don't want to put something out there that is dangerous. Once you do, nobody will get it. And then we're right back to where we started. Walk us through, if you will, please, sir, the what happens from here, I guess. So where are we at right now in terms of vaccine development? And then what happens as we head into the fall and winter and early 2021?
So where we are is a few of the seven candidates that Operation Warp Speed has invested in, and a few additional ones have gone into human trials, which means they are doing a study to establish the efficacy of the vaccine in recruited patient volunteers or human subjects. And the results of that would become available when the studies reach their defined endpoints and thresholds, which would be probably end of this year, early next year. And then the vaccines will go into production. Some initial buffer doses may already be ready, just to keep us having some capacity and some supply ready. And then after that would be when manufacturing and production starts. So that's the most aggressive timeline we can think of. The higher likelihood, though, is that sometime in Q1, Q2 of next year is when we would have early data on which of the candidates are likely to succeed. And then summer or later fall, when we would start seeing a large enough number of doses of the manufactured vaccine available for population use. But again, these are estimates which have lots of uncertainties and assumptions built into them.
When it comes to human trials, you take a group of people, you give half of them a placebo, half of them the vaccine, and then you expose them both to coronavirus. Is that the same coronavirus? That's the way it works?
Yeah, and then you very carefully monitor the development of any adverse events. You check for whether they've developed immunity against the disease and so on. But that's, again, not an area of my expertise. I'm mostly focused on manufacturing and distribution.
Well, I guess what I was wondering is, at what point do you begin to mass produce this stuff? Because you're not talking about a state thing. You're not talking about a United States thing. You're talking about the world. So do you have different a lab, factory, wherever you make this vaccine? If you think you got one and you're doing a human trial, do you just put everything into it and start manufacturing it in case it works? Is that what's going to happen here, or what is happening?
No, so firstly, we'll have the manufacturing capacity ready to go once the trial results come out. Then towards the end of the trial period, some small amounts of small to modest amounts of vaccine may already be manufactured and kept ready for distribution. And then the large-scale production would happen once the trial results are out. But again, the key thing is to have the steps ready.
And you don't
much
send...
pre-planning can be...
Go ahead, I'm sorry. No, like I say, you don't send this stuff out in gallon jugs or anything like that. Each one is in a little glass vial, I guess. It's all mechanized. So do factories ramp up to make these vials, or they're putting that in place now? It just seems like a lot of money involved here, either to retool or ramp up. Are these businesses that are in, say, for example, you're making the glass vials, right? Are they just pumping out as many glass vials as they can, knowing that eventually something's going to be put into it?
Yeah, so we package vaccines in glass vials. We are also trying new packaging formats such as blow-fill seal, a company in Alabama, which has received a contract to try out a plastic container with a glass coating on it. So it could be glass vials or other kinds of technology for packaging. Then is the question of how many doses do you put into a vial. You could put one dose in a vial. You could put, 5, 10, 20. So those are an additional set of questions. But most of the companies which manufacture glass vials are getting ready with the assumption that there will be a demand for up to 5 to 6 billion doses of a COVID-19 vaccine in the next couple of years. May not necessarily be in all of it in Q1 of 2021, but over the next couple of years, that much demand will exist. And so they are ramping up their production capacity, some on their own, some after having received specific contracts from Health and Human Services.
And not to get silly about this, but again, nothing just happens. So you need a raw material to make, or raw materials to make glass vials, do you not?
Yeah, so we need pharmaceutical-grade glass tubing of a special kind of glass that goes into making glass vials, because that glass has to be both biologically, chemically inert in a special threshold of inertness. And, you know, the kind of glass that goes into making that pharmaceutical-grade tubing is also specialized. We may have constraints in the manufacturing of the tubing for making the vials. You know, some people claim that we also have constraints on the glass and its raw materials itself. I don't have explicit answers on, you know, whether that is the case or not. We're still investigating what is the total supply capacity. But at the same time, I think some of the alternative methods to glass, such as using blow-fill seal and plastic, or using plastic containers with glass coating, at least in the medium to long term, will become alternatives to glass and will help relieve the supply chain of the pressures on that are going to come on just glass vials alone.
In terms of sterility, can you keep, after you make these things, can you keep these vials somewhere where they sit for a while and then you put the vaccine in them, or is it the kind of thing where it has to be done immediately in the same step where the glass is, I don't know, extruded, blown, however you make glass, and then you fill it up immediately so everything's sterile? I hope that's not a dumb question.
So for the plastic, or what we call it, the blow-fill seal, I think the filling is happening almost instantaneously. For routine glass vials, they can be stored under sterile conditions and can be filled at a later point in time. But then what you raised, Tommy, brings to another element, which is once the vaccine is filled into the glass vials, how long can we store it, at what temperatures? And, you know, some of the novel vaccine candidates we have require storage at minus 80 degrees centigrade. The more routine ones require between 2 and 8 degrees centigrade. So again, this requires a lot of infrastructure in keeping the vials cold or at the recommended temperature after they are manufactured and when they are getting into the distribution phase.
I guess I'm just thinking, when I hear this, none of this is going to happen quickly. And do you turn this out in batches? How do you decide where it goes first? Is it a bidding war, or does it depend on the country where it was? The World Health Organization does this, or is it depends on where it's manufactured? Or you understand what I'm asking you?
Yeah, what you bring up is a very important question, Tommy. I think we have to think about the need for a vaccine in a truly global sense. I think the disease is global. We know it doesn't respect borders. So in that sense, just thinking about manufacturing capacity for one country or distribution capacity for one country alone doesn't solve the problem. We might foresee that initially people want to focus, political leaders want to focus on vaccinating as many of the population in their countries. But we've got to think about who are the highest priority groups and then allow an equitable distribution of vaccine doses to the high priority groups. And high priority groups typically are healthcare professionals and emergency service workers. And then whatever remains, we keep equitably getting it out to the second tier and the third tier and then the mainstream population groups. But currently where we are today, I think it has led to every country thinking about, can we manufacture the vaccine on our own soil? Can we get as many doses for our own population? And that leads to tensions which are not necessarily working in favor of the supply chain being able to deliver as much as we want as quickly as we can.
Because if I don't know, I'm going to pick a name out of the air. Let's just make it Tucker. If Tucker Pharmaceuticals comes up with an effective vaccine, I'm not going to really. Am I going to share that technology with other labs so they can produce it? No, huh?
So one is Tucker Pharmaceuticals may or may not share it with other labs, and we see at least a few of the companies are already signing agreements with additional manufacturers in developing countries. But the second is if Tucker creates manufacturing capacity for their vaccine, sets up a plant, buys the vials, and if Tucker's vaccine does not succeed, how do you make sure that the capacity they set up, the vials that they bought, the supplies that they've got can be quickly transferred to Tucker B, whose vaccine actually is proven to be efficacious? And that's a coordination role which is very difficult to accomplish when there is politics at play, when there is enhanced national interests at play, and so on.
What is the thing that keeps you up at night or at the top of your list of worries as it relates to the vaccine, development, distribution, et cetera? If you had to, I guess, focus on one choke point or something that really concerns you, what would it be?
Two things, actually, Tommy. One is having cold chain capacity to distribute the vaccine in many developing countries of the world. It's not easy to go out and install fridges in remote parts of the world in such a short period of time. We can send them vaccine, but can we set up cold chain capacity? So that's one big worry. And the second big worry is that even though at a global level, we may end up having sufficient capacity for many of the things that are needed, does that mean that we have sufficient capacity for each country in case we start disaggregating the total supply and start reserving it for country by country, which may end up creating shortages or lack of supply for some manufacturer, for some countries. And that's the second big reason for worry for me.
I appreciate your time. I really do. And I know we'll talk to you again as we move forward in this. Thank you, sir. Prashant Yadav, Senior Fellow at the Center for Global Development and a Professor of Supply Chain Management.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.